What you just heard were members of the European Parliament standing up, holding hands, and singing Auld Lang Syne, a traditional British New Year's Eve song, after voting overwhelmingly to ratify the Brexit withdrawal agreement, which will officially begin at 11 p.m. on Friday, Greenwich Mean Time. While much of the rhetoric around Brexit has been about isolationism and controlling immigration, the split also means that Britain has to create new trade agreements with countries around the world. One big priority will be the trade agreement between the UK and the US. For more on this, I'm joined by Yasmin Serhan, London-based staff writer at The Atlantic. Welcome back to The Takeaway.
Thanks for having me, Arun.
Yasmin, there was a long stretch there where it seemed like there would never be a formal deal and we'd be stuck in some sort of eternal Brexit limbo, and now it's actually happening. What's the mood like?
Yeah, indeed. It's hard to believe years on that this day is finally arriving. The mood is actually a bit strange, I must say. I think, you know, there have been so many cliff edges, so many different Brexit days. As you recall, we had March 29th, then we had October 31st, and now we have this new date that, you know, I think after the election happened, that was kind of when it sort of sunk into everyone, like, okay, this is actually going to happen. And now, as a result, things are kind of quiet. I don't think there's as much anticipation now. I think people have sort of just resigned themselves.
Earlier, there were some doomsday scenarios in terms of the impact on the British economy. Is that still the case?
You know, I think obviously people are going to be watching out for that, but because Britain has secured a deal with the EU, because they won't be crashing out into nothing, but instead entering a transition period, I think those concerns are largely quelled, at least for now. It doesn't mean that obviously there isn't a ton of work to be done once they've left the EU. There is going to be, you know, another ticking clock once this transition period ends.
Let's discuss the particulars of trade for this new era. One of the big issues that U.S. officials have spoken out about recently is the digital services tax. Can you explain what that is?
Britain has proposed levying a 2% tax on American tech companies such as Google, Apple, Facebook, and Amazon. And the U.S., unsurprisingly, isn't a fan of this tax. It calls it arbitrary and discriminatory. France actually also tried to level a similar tax, but the U.S. threatened to impose retaliatory tariffs on French cheese and champagne. So France has actually backed down on that proposal, at least until the end of this year. Britain, however, seems to be pressing on with that, despite the fact that at Davos, U.S. Treasury Secretary Steve Mnuchin said that the U.S. would consider imposing retaliatory tariffs on British car makers. For the moment, Britain is pressing ahead with it, with the idea that this tax would be ready by April. But it seems like both countries are still kind of discussing that.
Two other trade issues that seem to be somewhat contentious between the U.S. and U.K. are healthcare and meat. Why are those areas so complicated?
Yeah, these are two of the kind of controversial topics that come up when we talk about a potential U.S.-U.K. trade deal. With healthcare, the biggest concern is around Britain's healthcare service, which is the NHS, and whether a trade deal could possibly incorporate greater U.S. pharmaceutical company access to the NHS. The fear here in Britain being that a trade deal could somehow result in medicine being more expensive. The other issue is the chlorinated chicken debacle, which is effectively about food standards in the trade talks and whether Britain would be willing to reduce theirs to allow access for U.S. beef and chicken. At the moment, Britain, as a member of the EU, at least until tomorrow, abides by European food standards, which bans chlorine-washed chicken from its markets. The argument that U.S. trade negotiators will likely be making during the trade talks is that they want access to British markets and would therefore be asking Britain to alter their food standards.
I mean, all of this, I guess, begs the question, is the UK now a smaller, more diminished trade combatant on the world stage?
I mean, no doubt Britain leaving this massive 28-member trading bloc will put it in a weaker leverage position. That said, I think it would be wrong to presume that the UK is necessarily going to bend to every concession that the US asks for. I mean, I think we've already seen, both with this digital services tax, but also in a number of other issues, foreign policy and otherwise, that Britain is really trying to demonstrate that, you know, it has its positions, that it's going to try to stick to them. We saw this with the Huawei decision this week to allow the Chinese tech firm into its 5G network. We also saw this with Britain's decision to seek an extradition of Anne Sekulis, the wife of the British diplomat, who was involved in a deadly car crash of a British teenager here, Henry Dunn. So, you know, we're seeing instances where Britain is pushing back as though they are kind of, you know, on sort of an equal playing field.
Does this mean that many of these trade stances we're seeing Boris Johnson having to appease his base, even at the expense of angering the Trump administration?
I mean, he's definitely balancing kind of a tightrope at the moment. On the one hand, yes, he wants this trade deal. It's all they've talked about throughout this Brexit process. But on the other hand, he needs to do what he believes is best for Britain and British citizens. And he also has to sort of maintain a good relationship with President Trump without hugging him too closely. Because, you know, as we all know, President Trump isn't exactly a popular figure here in the UK.
So Boris Johnson campaigned on getting Brexit done. Is that what happens this Friday?
In terms of leaving the EU, yes, Britain will leave, but by no means does that mean that Brexit will be done. I mean, this second phase, figuring out trade deals, both with the EU and the rest of the world, that's where the real work begins.
Historian Simon Sharma called this one of the darkest days in British history. On the other hand, Brexit proponent Nigel Farage called it the point of no return, waved flags, and is gloating. This is sort of his moment. How are regular people marking this moment?
It's going to be a day of mixed emotion for people who have been waiting for this for years. This is their moment. This is their Independence Day, as they're calling it. For people who have spent the last few years trying to stave off Britain's departure from the EU, this is obviously marks an end to that struggle. It's a day of lament, but you probably won't see too many British political figureheads making too much of a fuss tomorrow.
Yasmin Serhan is a London-based staff writer at The Atlantic. Thanks so much for joining me, Yasmin.
Thank you.
And listeners, we want to hear from you. How are you feeling about Brexit? What hopes or concerns do you have for the EU in the coming months? Leave us a voicemail at 1-877-8-MY-TAKE. That's 1-877-869-8253. This is The Takeaway.
There's a lot going on right now. Mounting economic inequality, threats to democracy, environmental disaster, the sour stench of chaos in the air. I'm Brooke Gladstone, host of WNYC's On the Media. Want to understand the reasons and the meanings of the narratives that led us here, and maybe how to head them off at the pass? That's On the Media's specialty. Take a listen wherever you get your podcasts.